Well, hello, on Tuesday, November 15th, 2011. My name is Brian Madden, and you're about to hear a recording of today's Brian and Gabe live show. Unfortunately, during the actual show, as we recorded it, the machine that was doing the MP3 recording actually crashed. So we had to restart that during the show. The show was live, so if you were lucky enough to listen to the show live, then you heard that first 15 minutes. But what's going to happen is you're going to hear today's conversation about 15 minutes in. The person talking when it begins is Peter McKay. Peter is the CEO of Desktone, and we were just talking about Desktone and sort of the whole desktops as a service space. But so Peter McKay was our guest. I was in the studio in San Francisco, as was Jack, and then Gabe was joining us remotely from Omaha. So now on to Brian and Gabe Live, already in progress.
Years ago, we're based on massive scale through service providers, managed service providers, cloud providers in the market. And so in an OEM basis, so they would pay us a royalty based off of the desktops per month that they would run. When I started about 18 months ago, it was clear that a lot of service providers didn't understand how to do it, how to pull all these pieces together. And so I made the decision at that time to, hey, in order for us to teach them, we have to do it ourselves. And so we stood up our own cloud. We started with Rackspace, and we've expanded it since to really understand how to do it, how to get storage optimized, how to handle servers, how to get the user performance to be what it needed to be. And so we started it, and we've started with, you know, no direct customers almost a year ago today. We're up to over 100 customers running. And so one, there was a large demand coming to us and nobody was there to fulfill it. So we wanted to do that. But two, it allowed us to make the platform better, to make it more scalable, more try and buy, more easy to get up and running. And the last is it has dramatically improved our ability to have these discussions with service providers. So we go into a Dell, for example, and we say, you know, they're having this conversation about what's working, what's not working with their offering. We've done it. I mean, we've worked with, you know, we figured out how to optimize for NetApp storage, or we figured out how to do the server. And so we're much more credible in those conversations, because you go into a telco and they say, look, I don't really care about all the pieces. I want to offer a service. And you just tell me the bill of material that gets me that service and all the pieces. And for us, having run it ourselves in data centers and help enabling 20 or so other partners to do it, we've picked up really how to do what we think is best practices of how to get a partner started in offering a service.
And the back end technology you're based on is a lot of off the shelf stuff, and then a lot of sort of custom glue.
It's ours. It's our technology leveraging some open source. So we minimize the Windows licensing, Windows Server. It's Ubuntu agents. It's this was a lot of work.
Is it vSphere or is it on Xen or what's
your... We run both. Oh. We run both, depending on what service providers. But that's a great point. We've kind of made it vendor agnostic as we started, and we're becoming more and more prescriptive, because a lot of people are asking for how do I get that price point from $20 down to 17, down to 16, down to 15. So a lot of work needs to happen.
One of the people is asking, why not just do that ourselves? And I feel like I can answer that. Like, why not? Hey, why use Gmail? Why not just run your own Exchange server?
Yeah.
I mean, you can. I don't believe for an instant. I said on an earlier show that I don't believe for an instant that, say, below, I don't know, 1,000 or 2,000 desktops, I don't believe that anyone can run it cheaper than $30 a month.
If you ask where the best lead source, both from end customers or partners, are anyone who have done it on-premise. People who have done it on-premise are our best customers, right? Because
it's really funny.
It is so true. I mean, one, they're knowledgeable, so they understand the good and the bad and all the experiences.
You don't have to create
them. They know how hard it is.
They know how hard it is. They know the CapEx. So, at VMworld, we were at VMworld in Copenhagen, and we probably had 15 companies come up to us and say, look, I've done this on-premise, and I've done 100 or 500 or 1,000. There is no freaking way I'm going to do 10,000 desktops doing it the way I just did it. It's just not scalable. So I may stop at 1,000, but can I do my next 5,000 or 10,000 in a provider that I can work with?
Is the floor moving down on that? Because someone's asking, well, how about, you know, like Citrix's VDI in a box? I mean, so the software vendors are making it easier and easier and lower costs. So is the race to the bottom?
Well, yeah, but Windows licensing is the way that Windows Microsoft charges
that's,
is going to
that's
going to
prop it up for a long time.
Yeah, I mean that's you know you talk to Microsoft. I mean everybody. I mean we got a lot of interest for people on the consumer side that I want to offer a consumer full desktop for the consumer. Well, the problem is you'd still need dedicated hardware, right? Because the Windows licensing requires it, and so that presents the challenge of going below a 20 desktop.
Because you literally need, and you're not even allowed to use the same storage, is that right?
Or no, you can shared storage.
Is
yes.
Okay, just but yet you literally have to have a blade per customer.
Yeah. So the multi-platform is one management platform for your like IBM has three data centers. They have one place in Research Triangle where they manage all their data centers with Desktone. So it's one platform, one management that allows you to manage all your tenants in three data centers, but each customer has to have their dedicated servers.
Does IBM offer for sale Desktone-based desktops?
Yeah, they were our first partner two years ago.
What's the deal with Virtual Bridges with them?
That was done on the Lotus side. It's more of an appliance-based, right? So they want to go in and offer a Kavisa where you want to get, hey, there's a virtual appliance. You go in and it's ready to go for 50 seats. Right, so similar to that. We're on the kind of global, the smart business desktop within IBM Global Services. But they've been doing it for about a year. They've been offering it for about a year and a half.
How's your uptime looked for the past 4.5 years as Desktone? I guess you haven't been in the business of serving desktops for more than a couple of years, right?
Yeah, from our perspective, we've learned a lot from the partners who've gone before us and started to build on our platform. And so when we go through this, when you deal with any partner, IBM or anybody, Verizon, whoever, the scrutiny that you go through and the security and the compliance, all the things that you need to offer a global solution is pretty stringent. And so we learned a lot from that process. So when we ran our own, that only evolved even further. But we feel as though leveraging the benefits of a Rackspace, an Equinix facility that we have in Virginia, has allowed us to really optimize for the performance side of it and the uptime. I mean, everyone has this very stringent SLA. I mean, far better than they're getting today on a desktop. Nobody really talks too much about SLA of desktops. And now if you move it this is what a lot of big companies are struggling with, like an HP or someone, where they have all these SLAs for their data center solutions, which is very stringent. But on a desktops, SLAs, when your desktop goes down, if I was at IBM, my desktop went down, you just call in India and they'll ship you a new desktop and you get 24 to 48 hours later, you get a desktop. But you were down for a day or two, right? Which is terrible. So on a virtualized in a data center, the reliability is far greater.
Speaking of downtime, our producer Justin is handing me a note that said our MP3 recording has crashed. Have you restarted that now?
Oh yes.
So we'll just have a blank spot in there. Like we'll have a blank spot. Like.
Oh no, we're gonna be.
So thanks for tuning in.
if you
just missed 15 minutes of really wicked awesome.
Yeah. Well, so we'll see if I don't know if there's any way to recover that. And next week we'll add, I guess, a second MP3 recorder.
We're gonna do one on Gabe's end.
so that's fun.
That was Citrix coming in and fixing that.
You mentioned Rackspace, but do you guys own your own hardware, right? Or do you just resell? You don't resell Rackspace's hardware.
No, we do that as well. Yeah, Rackspace. We just did a webinar with Rackspace, coincidentally, they drove. They did a mailer of 75,000 mailer. We had over 600 people in a webinar. We did. So,
but Rackspace uses Desktone for their desktop as a service platform, right?
Yes.
But if Rackspace is reselling. It's Desktone owned, like the hardware is owned by Desktone, right?
Rackspace refers to us. They give us 3-4 leads a day. We do the selling for them. We're moving in the direction of them reselling, but right now it's us reselling. And everyone that we do, any lead that comes in through Rackspace or that we do together runs on a Rackspace infrastructure, and we do as we go. Right?
Oh, so that is kind of like the more traditional model where you're providing a software service to Rackspace in the back end, but they're running it. The Rackspace desktops
the
run
hardware.
Their hardware.
They run the hardware. We run the software. On our other facility, it's all our hardware, all our infrastructure, everything.
Is Rackspace your Virginia facility, and then your own is in Chicago? Or?
The other way around.
Okay.
Yeah, Rackspace is in Chicago.
So I don't know if you want to share any kind of final thoughts. There's a lot of other things we want to cover on the show today, but certainly you're welcome to stick around and continue in with our conversation. But I don't know, give me what's next for Destone.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some very interesting announcements coming out over the next few months. I mean,
such as?
You'll see. You know, we talked a lot about NetApp. We talked about VMware. There's going to be some other. I mean, I guess the point we're really focusing on is we do one piece of doing desktop virtualization. And that we feel as though making the user performance is four of the top five. You know, it's got to be the same as your traditional desktop. But we also recognize that in order for this to get to that massive hockey stick, we've got to bring the cost of doing of offering virtual desktops down to make it much more affordable to the masses. And so with that, we have to do a lot more work on storage and servers and all the pieces that go into offering the service. And so what you're going to see from us, VMware was a start because the VMware announcement is taking the VMware cloud infrastructure, the best-in-class cloud infrastructure with the Destone platform to offer it for providers, right? And so we're doing some things with NetApp on the storage and servers. So we're trying to offer, we're working with all the, if you look at the pie chart of all the cost of offering a virtual desktop, we're focusing on the biggest chunks and trying to reduce that with things that we could do to optimize our platform, but also tighter endpoints. We had a long meeting with Wise yesterday on offering, getting more deeper with the devices to be able to do it more cost effectively, less downtime, better manageability, so operational costs go down. So we're really focusing on the total cost, and a lot of the discussions we're having here on the West Coast is around that ecosystem and how do we get a much more cost effective desktop without losing the performance.
All right. Well, with that, Peter McKay, CEO of Destone, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Anytime, Brian. Gabe, thank you very much for having me.
And like I said, stick around as we sort of chat through some of the other things that we've been talking about these past couple weeks. Gabe, what do you want to take a look at next? You've been taking a look at Citrix's VDI in a box, right?
Yeah, it's something that goes back to some conversations I had in Barcelona at Synergy and. Really, I disagree with Citrix's positioning of VDI in a box. And actually, you know, this goes back to the acquisition, which was in, what, May, I think, right? Right at Synergy in San Francisco.
Caviza in May, yeah.
Yeah. So at the time, Citrix was saying that, okay, we're acquiring Caviza and we're going to target them for 1,000-seat companies or less, small to medium business. And then when I get to Europe, I talk to some of the people there that are out in the field, and they say no, they're hearing 500, 300, it's sometimes as low as 50 users is where they should target Caviza for, and that's it. After that, it's all Zen Desktop. And so not only Citrix saying that, but then some of all the guys in the field have a different idea of where they should be targeting Caviza, and I feel like it has absolutely nothing to do with the number of people in an organization. I feel like targeting small to medium businesses for a solution that may work just as well in an enterprise is just foolish. And so I've got an article coming up where I basically just bitch for, you know, 1,000 words about it. But I don't think, I mean, I've had the conversation with a bunch of people one off here and there, but I've never really gotten it out there. So I feel like this is my vent. This is my soapbox. I'm gonna do one and done. You know, I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna rant, and then I'm gonna drop the mic and walk off the stage.
Well, this is the same thing we've been talking about before, though, because I don't know. This is a whole can of worms, but kind of going back to Peter's point, I mean, do you really think a small business actually has the wherewithal to build a Caviza, even if the next install is easy? The logistics of putting a desktop onto a server, I don't know if I see small businesses being able to do that.
No,
I mean, I think that if there is a solution out there that a small business could do, it's Caviza. But I think you're right. But just because it is the simplest of all of these complex solutions.
One point I'd want to add. I think what we have found in those companies that are under 100 is they just want to get out of the business. They don't want to add more servers. They don't want to do anything. They want to go to companies like Mindshift or Champion or people who are already managing their apps and managing their infrastructure and just get out of that business. And so Mindshift, we announced a couple months ago, has done 15 or so new customers added, all in that under 20, 30 employee base.
So yeah, and so all right, so and that's something I don't even cover in the article. I haven't published it yet, so I can go back and address that too. My whole thing is just based on the use case. I feel like Citrix telling their partners to target only small businesses, small to medium businesses, based on the number of employees is just ridiculous. And I feel like it should be 100% based on the use case. Well, at least use case should be number one. If I'm a 10,000 person company, but I only need to deploy this to, if my use case determines that I can go with a simpler or less complex solution that is VDI in a box, regardless of how many users are going to use it, I feel like the one that fits the use case better should win.
Yeah,
I have 1,000 users.
I agree, but partners aren't that smart.
Yeah.
I mean, Citrix has to have, like, they have to dumb down the messaging, and, like, you need something that even, like, you know, like a fucking sales rep can understand, which
well, that's
is
fine. I'm here to educate.
Yeah, this is more about, Gabe, I think this is more about sales conflict, channel conflict, than it is about what's the right solution, right?
Yeah. I've got a section on that, too.
Yeah.
Because you know, when it is. There's Citrix purchased a great product and then kept it as its own product, and now it's competing against itself in organizations. And so if you have to draw Citrix in that regard, based on that situation, Citrix has to draw the line at 1,000 users or whatever it is. It's some arbitrary place that they made up just so that they can easily say, oh, no, there's no conflict. You know, if it's under 1,000, it's Caviezza, and if it's over 1,000, it's Zen Desktop. There's no conflict here.
Do you think they bought Caviezza to shut down the potential competition?
No, I don't think so, because they invested in Caviezza ahead of time. I mean,
Do you think they invested in Caviezza to shut down the potential competition?
I don't know. I feel like, well, and so there's a part in this article about this, too, is I feel like what they should end up doing ultimately is blending the two and taking some of the awesome things with Caviezza, like the grid architecture and how easy it scales and that kind of thing, and blending that into Zen Desktop, which would, frankly, you know, one of VMware's major plays against Citrix is that Zen Desktop is complicated.
Yeah.
And so, and if they manage to streamline Zen Desktop a little bit with some of the awesomeness of VDI in a box, they can, but combine that with things like provisioning server and IntelliCache and, you know, some of the features that all has working for it. You know, I think that would go a long way and remove this whole conflict thing and this limit of where to target one product versus the other. And I think ultimately result in a better product.
But I think there's 0% chance of that happening, though, right?
Yeah, almost. I think they had to get a low-end solution, because I think from my understanding, they felt as though that's where VMware was encroaching on their turf on the low end, because Zen Desktop was so complex. And so they needed something. I mean, they had to go have something, because if people are coming in from the low end and kind of moving up, it would encroach onto the Zen Desktop side of the business. And Zen App, I mean, people need a desktop just as much on the low end as the high end. And I think that's why they made the move.
Sure.
Yeah. But from a technology standpoint, VDI in a box and Zen Desktop, I mean, there's no similarities really at all, just in terms of product architecture and everything. So
and that means there's no upgrade path either. So if you decide to invest in VDI in a box and then you grow and want to expand that, or your use case changes to something that requires Zen Desktop, because like I said, I'm maintaining it's not about the number of users, it's about all the requirements of your
goes VDI. Back to our old point, like, why would anyone want to build their own VDI? And I'm not just saying that because Peter's in the room. I mean, I've said this we've done 10 shows. I probably said this on 7 of them. Like, I just can't understand, unless you have like 10,000 users or more, why you would even think about investing into the space. If you decide that VDI is right for you, I should point out. So if you decide that you want to have a hosted desktop, why does anyone think they can run their own Exchange server better than Gmail? Anyway, though, so that's
so there's an article tomorrow that explains it. A lot of the stuff that we talked about here. It's coming out tomorrow, and then that's my one and done. I won't have anything to say about it anymore.
At the end of the day, whether VDI in a box wins, I think we can go back to our friend Kevin Goodman. So I think 9-time Briform speaker, founder of RTO Software, who sold them to VMware, and you know, good friend of me and Gabe. Kevin has a lot of awesome sayings, but among one of them is sales reps are coin operated.
Oh yes,
and so
gumball machines.
Yeah, so Citrix can absolutely through. I don't mean the pricing of Caviezza, right? I mean like how they're compensated, and how the partners are compensated. You change that comp plan around, and you can, you know, like pull in the strings of the channel about what products they're going to sell.
Yes, they know it well. I mean, that's a model they really understand. And I think there's a little bit of confusion as to, as Gabe, you pointed out, just what products are the right fit, where do you sell, who can sell what. So mm-hmm. I think they're moving in that direction to clarify that a little bit more, but still needs a lot more to come.
One of our guests in the chat room asked about Gabe, are you going to do a comparison of all the HTML5 connection brokers and HTML5 clients?
I was kind of waiting for Citrix to actually release their HTML5 receiver that is still not out yet. They have one, but it's only for Chrome OS.
Yeah.
So, and I, as you know, returned to my Chromebook because I hated that damn thing. So,
did you literally return that? Like, you actually returned it?
I literally returned it. I boxed it back up and sent it back to Amazon and got my
because we paid it. Like, Work bought that, right? So, like, for you to actually, like, put something in a box, like, pack that shit up and tape it and print a label, that's a very high bar.
Wow.
But now I don't feel bad, you know, with my Kindle Fire that's going to show up today.
That's right. A day
which,
earlier.
By the way, if that doorbell rings, I will not be at my desk. On this, so we have 24 minutes
For your Kindle,
right? Then I'll come back up, and the world can listen to me unbox it.
That'd be kind of. We should do that anyway. Speaking of listening,
good radio, right there.
Did you listen to the conversation I had last week with Matt Heller about Browsium?
No, I didn't. So we have been super busy with something that we'll get to here in a little bit. But I asked you to ask
him. Last week,
huh?
Weren't you on vacation last week?
Last week with Matt Heller. That was this week.
Oh. Anyway.
It's all running together, isn't it?
It's all running together, right? Long
days.
Or
was it last Friday or
something? Anyway, Matt Heller, Browsium.
Yeah. So the question that I asked you to ask him is, what is their future, or what does their future look like? Because as people start to move all their stuff, or continue to move all their stuff off of IE6, I think Browsium might have an expiration date. So, and maybe not. Maybe they're so awesome that they just, everybody's going to stay on IE6, you know, and use their plugin or wrapper or whatever you want to call it.
Exactly. And what he basically said was that IE6 is like the biggest pain point right now. But you have this with all the different versions of IE and all different versions of browsers. And he said, especially now that both Firefox and Chrome have gone to this like 6-week, you know, rapid release cycle, we're always going to have this whole thing of different browsers break different things, and this changes that behavior in that version of Java and whatever. So it's just that IE6 is the biggest pain point. By the way, he provided a little bit of sort of color to the context of why this was the case with IE6, which I didn't actually remember, but he said IE6, that was the first browser that Microsoft released where they said, hey, now you can take all your existing Windows apps and rewrite them for the web. Yeah. But Windows apps have a lot more access to the system with what they can do for like installing components, but also like file system access and registry access and just all sorts of goofball stuff. And in order to make it so it's easy to move those to the web, you had to basically make IE6 like wide open and let sort of anything do anything. Mm. And it didn't really occur to people. This was 10 years ago now. It didn't really occur to people that might be bad. Like maybe your mom shouldn't be able to browse to some website and it like starts reading files from her hard drive, which is what IE6 could do. Yeah. So it said it wasn't that IE6 itself was bad necessarily, or the rendering engine, like all the rendering engines break different versions of websites and stuff, but it's really the thing that they make so much assumptions around security, the applications, and so much effort was made to put all the applications onto that platform that then by the time 2-3 years go by and the world realized that was a stupid idea, they had already migrated a lot of their applications over. So that's kind of why we're stuck with that. But he said also the same is true with IE7, the same is true with all these different versions, and their ultimate goal, now granted, today they're only on Windows and they're only on IE, but very soon they'll be Chrome, Firefox, and IE as well. He said ultimately their goal is to separate the browser rendering capabilities from the browser shell, to use the real word, from the Chrome, you know, quote unquote, yep, as we say, so that a user can choose to use, you know, Google Chrome or Firefox or IE, any version they want, whatever, and then the websites they go to can also, the IT department or even the service provider can sort of guarantee that websites are going to work regardless of what browser the user has chosen. So ultimately, they want to take that cross-platform as well, although that's sort of longer term, like actual cross-platform, like going to Mac and all that kind of stuff. But in the shorter, medium, long term, like in the next year, we can look to have that capability and even work with IE and, like I said, Google Chrome and Firefox and everything.
Remember when Opera used to have that ability where you could emulate IE6 or something just to get by some sites that had some goofiness on there? Man, that's got nothing on this stuff.
Well, yeah, because that's the thing, too, because it's not just, because even, you know, there's different compatibility.
It's not just emulating it. It's actually being IE6.
Yeah, there's different compatibility views. And what's awesome is with Browsium is that it's on a tab-by-tab basis, but it's not like there's like IE frame, you know, for we can put an Internet Explorer frame inside Chrome and that kind of stuff, but that's like an actual like instance of IE running virtually inside Chrome. And what Browsium is doing, it's on a tab by tab basis, but all your tabs have access. It's the same cookies, it's the same bookmarks, it's the same everything. So it's not like you're going to a whole other browser, which is actually one of the problems. If you take your IE6 and package that up with ThinApp or AppV, it's a whole separate browser. Or even if you do it on a server and like deliver server hosted seamless windows to IE6, it's a whole separate environment. And this is like it's your one browser with your one set of bookmarks and plugins and all that kind of stuff.
So are these using bits from the actual browsers?
It is. And so what happens is...
Is that legal?
It is. And because what happens is... So they actually go to Microsoft. You have to... If you download the Browsium, if you buy or even try... You can try it for free, Browsium. Like, you sort of build your package. And so the package builder actually goes to, like, the download.microsoft.com and pulls down the bits from Microsoft. So you have the actual original bits from the original maker. And so far, like that, and that's been fine. So they're not redistributing any code. Microsoft is they said from that standpoint, everything looks good. But the real future, too, is not just about browser versions and rendering. I mean, different versions of Java, different plugins. So, I mean, you know, you can control all that kind of stuff. So it would seem from their standpoint that their future, the technology is pretty good. I would love to see them get bought by someone like a Quest, maybe. I almost hope Citrix or VMware doesn't buy them because I think they'll fuck them up. But if they get bought by someone who's got some like...
With a little more broad of a reach, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and just someone
not
who
somebody
can,
in desktop vert space, but like just somebody that kind of covers all of IT.
Yeah. So, so that was cool. So that was my first time kind of sitting down with him. And if you know, that the whole... we've got the hour-long conversation there where we just really got into... I mean, Matt's been in the space for a long time, and used to work at Microsoft in the IE space, and a bunch of the people at Browsium worked at Microsoft, and he's just got a lot of perspective on this industry and how the browser world got to be such a clusterfuck. And obviously, it's a vested interest for him, but it doesn't look like that's changing anytime soon.
Well, that's good. Cool. The man, that was a long answer. So broad-ranging IT companies, you spent some time finally with Oracle, right? Can all the Oracle/Sun-loving people finally breathe a sigh of relief that Brian spent time going to see
and
Oracle's VDI solution?
It's funny because we spent some time with Bob Gianni. Gianni, is that his name? He's the guy who like was the owner. Like he created the Sunray and has been at Sun all those years. And we just, you know, it's about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, just set everything up with Sun to go visit and spend some days in their labs and work with everything. And then Oracle bought them.
Buys them, right?
And it was sort of all thrown up into you know, disarray again. But
wasn't this, didn't the last time we really focused on them, wasn't that like Warren Ponder era? Wasn't that Warren that was there?
That was Warren. He hasn't been there in a long time, but I'm Craig Bender, but Craig Bender's still there. Thin, I think.
I feel like the last time that we actually spent time with people from Sun talking about Sun stuff was with Warren. And maybe it was Craig, but it's been 4 years.
Yeah. So the thing is, so I asked on Twitter what people wanted us to ask of Oracle. And the one thing they said is, you know, do they still have a commitment to the VDI space? Do they have a commitment to the Sunrays? And their answer is an emphatic yes. So they said all the products that make up Oracle's desktop virtualization, so it's VirtualBox, it's Oracle VDI server, it's the Sunray clients, and it's what else? The Oracle VDI software clients. They have released multiple versions of all of those since Oracle bought Sun. Yeah, since the acquisition. They have done more press releases and have more products and have a bigger staff now at Oracle than they ever did under Sun. They said it's hard to see because, you know, if we double the size of that group, then, but now we're inside Oracle. So it's, you know, we went from where Sunray was I'm making these numbers, it's like 5% to 10% if it is a son, but now it's like from 0.5% to 1%. So in terms of actual percentage of the company, you go to oracle.com and you're probably not reading too much about a Sunray. But this, you know, look at this, look at the job postings. We've got so many jobs that are hiring. They did like 15 press releases in the past 12 months about their desktop virtualization products.
They appear to have marketing dollars, right? I mean, we saw they were at Bryform in London. They weren't in the U.S., but I mean, I was as surprised as you were to see them there.
Yeah, and we actually talked about that too. So they said that the U.S. show, it kind of caught them off guard a little bit because they didn't like every big company, they just sort of require a year in advance planning, and they couldn't, like, no one knew about Bryform at Oracle or at, I guess it was, yeah, Oracle in those days. So, but we should hopefully see them at both these Bryforms next year. I didn't know that guy Wim, who is at Open World, that Jack saw present. I forget his last name, but he was actually the CEO of Network Computer back in the day, and like he knew Larry from, you know, like something boat related, and you know, like the Oracle NC, like this. So like that guy's that. I mean, like
way back.
This is my first experience ever in like '97, before I even got involved with Citrix, of knowing about, you know, the concept of taking your desktop out of your, you know, like the computing off your desk. But yeah, they were and so they still use ALP. So the Sunray is still connected to the ALP to the Sunray server. The Sunray server can run on Solaris, but now can run on Linux. They said it'll actually run on really anything. They can run VirtualBox, so it can run on Windows too. Although they don't like officially support it on Windows, but so you know, for your actual backend server, they connect to ALP via that. And they've got there's an iPad client that uses ALP. There's Mac, Linux, and Windows clients all use ALP. Like all soft clients use ALP. Because they're connecting also, which is kind of interesting, because they're connecting their ALP protocols, kind of connecting it at the hypervisor level, well, in this case, at the VirtualBox level, you can run any guest VM and have the same performance in all of them. So your guest VM, I mean, Windows and Linux and Solaris are like the main ones that people use, but you know, we saw a demo with Windows 3.1. I mean, old XP, like whatever you want. Like you can connect. They said Mac. I mean, it works fine for Mac. You have to obviously be on Apple hardware, but Mac OS remoting that. They can do it all. So their big push in terms of what they're looking at is supporting their enterprise applications, because they said the Oracle enterprise applications are so huge and so complex, and they went to this whole like push like to make everything web-based like 5 years ago. That's before, you know, obviously HTML5 and even Ajax and this kind of stuff. So they had all these like crazy plugins that is all proprietary. And they said that like the Oracle enterprise applications as a whole are like the worst environment for like plugins you need to manage and all that crap and all these like super high requirements, even though it's all web-based. So they said that a lot of people within Oracle started using Sunrays and the iPad clients. Like the iPad client is their version. Like you want this Oracle, you know, ERP financial system to be on your iPad, and there's no way it's working on a Safari browser on the iPad. So like using their client, going through the Sunray server is the way to do that. And so they said that's what they're really going after, is these large verticals like the you know, financials and healthcare and stuff, where they have these Oracle enterprise applications and now they can deliver it all down. So they said if you go to like HIMSS, which is a big healthcare IT show, all of Oracle booth, everything's on Sunrays. And they're not even doing that to sell Sunrays. It's just as a show, all their software, it's just way easier to make it work on Sunrays when you don't have to deal with all that crap happening on the actual endpoint.
It's actually a smart move by Oracle. I mean, it buys them time, right?
Yeah.
It can access, I think it opens up a lot more opportunities for both sides of Oracle, right?
Yeah, and it's smart because, like, let's be honest, are they really going to compete against Citrix, like against VMware on the, you know, like SmackDown, checkbox, you know, like VDI versus their stuff is not happening.
But it's a great way to get into organizations, right? Because everybody has Oracle, PeopleSoft, you know, all the different enterprise apps. So it actually opens up some opportunities.
And the fact that like all their client devices have the smart card readers, and that's all integrated with the Sunray and the whole protocol stuff, and it's all there. So now I haven't put my hands on a Sunray. They're actually shiny now. They're shiny and white. And they said it's the first hardware that's branded as Oracle. So like it was, they literally had the Sunray 3 series like ready to go during the acquisition, like right as it happened. And it was like an 11th hour, like they actually got it last minute to get the paint on them, you know, the screen printing with the Oracle logos on the things instead of Sun. So that was the first Oracle hardware. but I'm thinking, so I told them to, you know, I mean, they can, I said send me a Sunray. I haven't used the ALP protocol. I kind of asked. I didn't mean to sound like too naive, but I was like, well, does it do like multimedia? Because I remember ALP with multimedia back in the old days. It would like knock you down to a 320 by 240 screen, but they said it does multimedia redirection and all this kind of stuff now. So
there's a guy in the chat room that doesn't. He says it's dreadful. Look, and he's posting more. It's one of those things where it's based on experience, your use case experience too. So for some people love it, and probably others maybe aren't using it in an appropriate use case, or yeah. What it was designed for at least.
Yeah, I mean the Sun Rays are great, especially on the high security side, because you can have one Sun Ray that can access multiple networks, and they've got Sun Rays that support optical networking, which is very big in the again the high security side, and multiple optical networks with different desktops on different networks. So all that kind of stuff is no brainer. I think if you got Oracle Enterprise apps, you know that's maybe closer to no brainer. I don't know if I want to say that quite yet, but this is the Melvin one. So ALP, like, yeah, this dude in the chat is saying that ALP is dreadful. Maybe. I guess
the problem is that there's no other option, right? So ALP might suck, but it's not like you can still use Oracle's VDI solution and use PC over IP or HDX.
Actually, so
or
here's one thing I learned is that the Sunrays and stuff actually support RDP also. So maybe that, I don't know if my choice is RDP, because who knows?
But it's not like you can use the... Yeah, I'll say it again. You can't use HDX or PC over IP.
Yeah. But look, I told him to mail us some. So I don't know. I have no idea how plentiful Sunrays are for them. Like, I told him to send me one in the mail, and maybe Gabe to send you one also. Because when Jack comes out to visit you, and you guys, wait, did we talk about that today? When you guys spend that week kind of, you know, installing and banging on all these different products, I think we should add the Oracle VDI stack to our list also.
Yeah, so we've only got a few days, so we can actually try to focus on that. This is more just to explain some stuff to Jack, and so that, you know, we can both get our hands on some of the stuff that's newer, just to go through it. So, we can definitely try to do it, but that might be something that we can
save that for back
together
here. Yeah,
so,
but I'll put one of these Oracle. I'll put a Sunray on my desk for a couple, days.
Yeah.
At least I'll give it a couple
or
days.
I can come
we'll
out
see.
There. And, yeah. There's worse places to go in January than San Francisco, so I could just go out there in January and we can stand it up.
Actually, our company meeting is in January in Boston, so why don't you come out here that week, and that can be our conflict that means we can't go to the company meeting.
Perfect. You get an excuse.
There you go.
Yeah, last time I went to the company meeting, there was literally a foot of snow in my rental car that I had to brush off the car.
January, February, is not Boston's not the place.
Yeah.
And you were under the awning. It hurts.
Yes, brushing at the front. So that was Oracle. That was literally yesterday. We went down there to Oracle. Oh my gosh! And of course, in their corporate headquarters, there's like a little pond, like one of those like corporate bullshit lakes out front of their office, with the freaking like Oracle racing, America's Cup yacht. Yeah, the winning yacht from a few weeks ago.
It's a 75 foot long by 20 foot wide boat in an 80 foot by 25.
Yeah, I don't think it could have rotated. Yeah, exactly. But so that was yesterday. But
it was a lock.
Yes.
Last week we also visited NVIDIA, and that was actually cool. So you may remember that. We talked about this last week on the show that we were going down to NVIDIA, right?
I think it might have been that day.
Yeah, and so we went down there, and it was really cool. We met all the folks who the different product managers who own the Quattro, and just kind of talked about their vision for desktop virtualization, and their whole thing is exactly as we sort of mentioned, where, you know, they're not trying to say VDI is the right use case for everyone, but they're trying to say that right now a lot of people are against VDI because it's just a worse user experience than having your desktop locally. And now granted, put aside for a moment the fact you have to have a connection and decent network speeds and all that kind of stuff. So, like, yeah, we're saying that in a scenario where VDI would work, where you do have a persistent connection and a moderately okay network, still, you know, VDI, okay, like some office apps here and there, that's fine. But, you know, a couple of real users, a couple of big screens doing YouTube and real apps and all this kind of stuff, in general, like, I wouldn't put that on VDI. Like, I wouldn't use VDI if I had the choice not to. And they're saying we want to fix that. And they want to fix that just in terms of using their hardware, their GPUs, both to enable GPUs to be exposed to Windows so you can do all your 3D graphics and like flip and whatever else this stuff is, but also in using the power of the GPU to actually deliver the protocols down to the user in a really good way. So they're partnering with Citrix right now for HDX 3D Pro. They're partnering with Microsoft for RemoteFX. They just announced a partnership with VMware around Vue, doing this kind of same things like HDX 3D Pro. But they kind of talked about where they want to go these next few years and really make it so that if you want to have VDI, but like a real full rich desktop experience with all the graphics and all power that you expected to have, they intend to make that happen. And they're going to make it happen by making obviously the hardware that they continue to make, but also just having the right drivers and interfaces and APIs and working with their partners to actually get it delivered. So, and we talked a lot about actually, maybe I'll write an article about this also, the difference between like virtual GPU versus a physical one-to-one GPU versus GPU assistants. So like, I didn't realize like virtual GPU actually doesn't exist, because I thought that virtual GPU was like what RemoteFX did. But they say, well, that's not a real GPU. Like, yes, you're exposing WDDM drivers that can do some 3D stuff if you're using DirectX. But in RemoteFX, it's not like an actual full-on GPU that's exposed to that session. So you can't do, like, for example, OpenGL in RemoteFX. So virtual GPU is nothing that's not something that anyone has right now. And it's not something that they have either. But I asked about it, and of course they won't say like, well, nothing's been announced. I'm like, but you're working on it, and they're like, nothing's been announced. So, but hypothetically, here's how a virtual GPU would work. And this is something people have been talking about in the forums and stuff. But I didn't realize the difference between these three things. So that's what we're going to dig into. So Gabe, you've got your article for tomorrow. So I'll work on that for Thursday.
Okay.
So that's NVIDIA. Oh, and the coolest thing. How about those projectors?
Yeah. These projectors that seamlessly meld two projected screens together and use a web camera to perform all their calibrations automatically, and then use the NVIDIA technology to perfectly skew the image on each projector. And if you nudge a projector, you know, the two images become out of sync, but you just press a button and have all the syncing run again, and it, you know, project some squares that the web camera sees. Then all the calculations are run again. It's really cool.
And both, so we see this happen at like these big overproduced shows, like keynotes at Synergy with fireworks and shit, and VMworld and stuff. So like we always look at that technology, and we've seen that there's 50 projectors that run this whole thing. I wonder if those are doing that, or if those have like, you know, a bunch of guys each nudging the things until they line up.
Well, no, exactly, because here's the thing too. You have to overlap, because like getting it truly seamless, you can't actually have the things precisely lined up enough that you have a seamless line between the projectors. So you literally have the projectors overlap each other, but this camera and this thing, it can look at how much the overlap is, and then it fades the image so you don't get like double brightness in the overlap area. So it like literally fades out one image and fades the other one, so you have the exact and so we have like a double wide desktop that you can drag windows across, and you cannot see the seam until you like put your hand over one of the projector lenses and realize like where the border is. And like Jack said, literally you like nudge one of the projectors and the image is all messed up, and hit recalibrate, and it like projects all these like alien patterns on the wall, and the web camera looks at it and figures out like what it should be. And the reason this is NVIDIA technology, they didn't develop like the webcam projecting algorithms, but the algorithms are all applied, like the transforms are applied in the GPU. So it's kind of totally transparent to the CPU. It's just like on the fly, as the image is going to the frame buffer, for lack of a better word, the GPU is like doing some last minute transforms to make it all kind of line up right. So that was kind of the biggest.
Impressive.
That was cool.
No kidding.
We also saw a 4K display, which is like an LCD display that was 4,000 pixels by 2,000 pixels or something. And it's funny because it had to have four plugs in the back, because like the DVI signal can't even have the resolution that high. So I'm like, wow, it was like a 42 inch TV, but with like 4,000 pixels by 3,000 pixels, wow, or by 2,000, whatever.
So yeah, it's like four high def TVs now, right?
14. Yeah.
The type of crazy stuff that you figure you would find at when you visit NVIDIA.
Yeah.
Honestly, I figured that NVIDIA would have something crazier than that. Like, that to me just seems like, you know, I figured you give us a weekend, we could probably make something like that.
I mean, well, but they could show us.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of 3D stuff, and a lot of, they're really hopped up on the low power stuff now too. So like looking at, because they did some demos with this virtual like VDI kind of stuff where they showed an iPad client, an iPad just running an app they developed themselves, so it's not available in the store, but connecting remotely to one of these like CATIA, like AutoCAD kind of applications, but from the iPad. But you had the full on like spinning 3D models, you had AeroGlass, all that kind of stuff running, but to the iPad, which is obviously connecting wirelessly. So that was kind of a future, like, it wasn't even, it was just a prototype, like some technology they were working on. They sort of had a working demo they were able to show us. So that was pretty cool. So, hey, we've got about 10 seconds left until 9 o'clock, but since we're not on the real radio, we can talk as long as we want, because I do want to hit up the one last topic before we close out today, and that's, Gabe, why don't you tell us what you're working on this week?
Well, it's you and I. You know, I'm a little groggy today because I was up until like 2 last night doing some little work. We're actually we're launching a new website, and it's about IT consumerization. It will be called consumerizeit.com, but it doesn't exist yet, so stop trying to go there. but really, and this is Brian, this is your soapbox issue. You kind of created this dragon back in Europe, although you've been talking to me about it for much longer than that, and anyone else will listen. So what's our focus?
Yeah,
we have absolutely no content for this site, so it will launch on day one with one thing if we're lucky.
So the idea is we're launching. So TechTarget actually launched a searchconsumerization.com, which is, that site's live now, and that's like a typical TechTarget search site. So it's more news type stuff written by, I'll call it, actual journalists. And then, you know, compare that to BrianMadden.com, which is just kind of, you know, a few mental patients and their crazy opinions. So Consumerize IT is like the BrianMadden.com for the consumerization of IT. So it's actually going to run on the same platform that runs BrianMadden.com. So all your user IDs for commentary and all that kind of stuff. And we're going to focus on that whole thing. You know, that thing that I've been calling FUIT. And the whole, you know, how we deal with not just desktop virtualization, but, you know, security, mobile device security, and people using Dropbox and 4G and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. Because, you know, I wrote that article about the consumerization of IT, why most people are getting it wrong, and I kind of set the whole problem and set the whole, like, it's really about FUIT, that users can do whatever they want. And I said in part two, I'm going to dig into some of the answers. And so far, I've not yet written a part two. This website is part two. And because it's not, you know, this article became sort of, you know, so long, and just trying to look at these different solutions. And I've got a list of about 50 items long of different topics I want to drive in this space. So we're going to launch that website this week, actually. And then I'll kind of split my time between writing on BrianMadden.com and ConsumerizeIT.com. So we're very excited about that. And that's been, it's actually funny because even though we're just making like essentially a clone of BrianMadden.com to run on that, but there's just a lot of work to kind of get it all spun up. But that's going to be,
yeah. Here we thought it'd be like a few hours on a weekend. We could copy it, stand it up, away we go. And I think we're like 42 or 43 hours into it, like as far as actual like developer man hours.
Yeah, but that'll be it's exciting. I mean, it's so closely related to BrianMadden.com, and, you know, Briform is really expanded to cover the consumerization space as much as it's doing desktop virtualization, and we'll kind of carry out the same thing there. So ConsumerizeIT.com, that's going to launch hopefully this week. We're just moving the staging slide onto a production server today. So hopefully, I don't know, Thursday, Friday this week, we'll get that launched, and we'll figure out. By the way, I bought the domain name FUIT.com. The powers that be at TechTarget put the kibosh on using that. It's the first time, I can say this, we've been there 3 years now, first time they said no to anything we wanted to do. They were like, you can't call it FUIT. Because I think they were afraid that we were like insulting the IT people.
Bucket.
Yeah. But
we can have a tag, a nook of the site called FUIT. I'm most excited about that because that topic is going to be about actually saying F you to IT. You know, basically like how, like how we circumvent yeah,
the firewall,
the policies. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that one. All the black hats out there will like it too. So I think that we will we'll get a lot of submissions for how to do things.
And we'll forward FUOT.com to that tag page. Yeah, well, anyway, we should wrap up. Prediction show, people are asking about. We'll do prediction show later in December. We'll do a year in review show, and then we'll do predictions for next year.
We usually do that in January at the company meeting. So if I'm out in San Francisco for that, we can probably
do
that.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely not going to company meeting. So there's I like doing that in you know, at a later time. So I don't know. I think that's about it. Any final thoughts, Gabe, Jack, or Peter McKay?
Nothing for me.
No, I think
good
it's
show.
I think it's a good show.
All right, and yeah. To those of you who are listening to the recording, that's sorry we missed some pieces, but we'll put in some redundancy for our MP3 encoding for next week. And I guess that's it. Next week, by the way, we will be back. We'll see you same time. So to all who joined into the chat, thank you for contributing. To all who are listening later, thank you for listening. And Peter McKay, thank you for waking up early and coming in today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, talk to you all
have
next.
A nice day.
Thanks, Gabe. Yep.